Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Man, it feels so good to win. It feels so good to win. In addition to that, too, you know, we get the sweep. And how many times have we been there on the precipice of a sweep and you don't finish on Sunday and it feels like it puts a damper on the weekend, right? Well, we pulled it off. And we're going to break that down here in the first segment of the show. And we'll look around the league and we'll preview the game with Southern Miss. We got our pitching matchups. We'll talk a little bit about that, kind of get you up to speed on that. We'll have the full scouting report on Southern Miss's starter tomorrow morning at jeanspage.com. That is a VIP feature, and it's one of those things that a lot of people have really enjoyed, just something nobody else has. We have access to the analytics, and so we just try to give you guys a preview of what to expect. Sometimes they don't last very long. And that's a tribute to our offense. But hope you guys are doing well wherever you are today. I hope that you and everybody you love is free from harm. A lot of things happening out there in the world. You never know. You never know what's going to hit the inbox, right? I mean, you don't. You don't ever know. When the phone calls come in, the phone rings, you get a text message, and it's tough, man. Life can be tough. But we're going to live life and live it more abundantly. Until the time comes, right? And we're going to enjoy Mississippi State sports and enjoy each other and sow some seeds into those that we love, because love is the greatest of all things. It truly is. Speaking of love, you're going to love Bulldog Burger Company if you don't already. Many of you probably already have a raging love affair with Bulldog Burger Company. And who can blame you? As I've shared, there's some new items on the menu. Stop by and check that out. Maybe kind of just like freshen things up a little bit. In the first quarter, you get a new few menu items. Some new appetizers. Some things have changed. And you owe it to yourself to go in there, maybe try one of those smash burgers. I haven't done it yet, but I plan to this week. Matter of fact, tomorrow seems like a good day to do it. Yeah, might check that out. I might get you a smash burger tomorrow and then give you a review on Wednesday. That sounds like a plan, right? You need to make your own plans to go dine at Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's true. Trust the science and get that chocolate shake to go. You can ride that ride home with a smile. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's jump into game one here. We felt like this was going to be the game probably that would be the tightest. And that kind of proved to be the case. And even with that, I never really felt like we were in trouble, right? I'm sure you guys did as well. But it was a scoreless first, even though State kind of mounted a little bit of a two-out rally. In the bottom of the first, we got two men on and then couldn't score. Vandy gets a one-out walk and then gets picked off. Mike Mancini, who picked Vandy over Mississippi State. Mike, how do those three L's taste, man? Right? Right, Mike? All right, bottom of second, State breaks through here. And it's Kevin Maluski with a solo shot. And, man, this at bat, to me, he looked lost for a bit. And the next thing you know, he gets a pitch he can handle. That's a big physical specimen at the plate. And hits a jack. And then, of course, right behind him, Bryce Chance doubles with two out and a run home. We can't bring him around. But Bulldogs lead 1-0. Now, Vandy ties it top of third. And McPherson, I thought, was really good. But we give up an 0-2 single. Probably caught a little too much of the plate there. Maldonado, who I thought was really good for Vanderbilt. Not your typical first baseman. He's really, really athletic. And then Reynolds doubles. Very talented catcher. Back from concussion protocol. He doubles inside the bag at third. Runner has to hold at third. And then Wade, the nine-hole hitter, flies out to right field. It's a sack fly. Run scores. It's 1-1. And then from there, McPherson just kind of pitched out of any trouble. Bulldogs answer in the bottom of the third. And again, we talk about 80 grade teammates and 80 grade at bats. Well, you got one here with one down in the third. Noah Sullivan, who didn't have a good weekend against Arkansas, had a pretty good weekend against Vanderbilt. He gets down 0-2 in the count here and then works it for a walk. Some really good close takes. He's seeing the baseball well. Then Stallman flies out and it's like, well, here we go. You know, we're down, you know, just the one out. And then Fry gets a four-pitch walk. And then Ryder Woodson. Three-run shot to center field makes it a 4-1 ball game. And then Parker flies out. Nothing doing for Vandy in the fourth. Bulldogs get a two-out single from Aiden Teal in the home half of the fourth, but can't get him around. Then we had this crazy scenario here, and I want to talk about this just a little bit here. This whole Ace Reese thing. You know, he strikes out looking. He's charged with a pitch clock violation. Now, this, again, I think was good scouting on behalf of Vanderbilt. It's like, hey, we kind of picked up on the fact that Ace Reese doesn't come set until we do, so we're going to wait. So by the spirit of the rule, it was the right call. I did not like the call, and I'll tell you why. Even though it's within the framework of the rules, and O'Connor said as much after the game. And you know, Brian's got to be a little more diplomatic than I do. They can't find me. A balk should have been called. At worst, a pitching clock violation on the pitcher has to be called. And I have shared my thoughts on this with the powers that be. And let me tell you why. We don't have football players calling delay of game penalties. And you have a pitcher that is on the rubber. It's time to come home. And he just kind of emotionally steps off and embarks at the second base umpire. And then they reward him with a call. That sets a bad precedent. Umpires miss calls all the time. As you guys are well aware. Officials in basketball miss calls all the time. And in football, right? You don't get to be a player. Number one, it's against the rules of conduct for players to challenge calls like that. And so, it's a bad rule anyway. But if we're going to have the rule, then it needs to evenly apply to everybody. And that's my take on that. Again, I think a balk should have been charged. But at worst, it should be a pitch clock violation. But give Vandy some credit for kind of making an in-game adjustment. And what do you know? They do it with a run on and with two strikes on Ace Reese. And we kind of got lured into a trap there. We did. Again, by the spirit of the rule, it's the correct call. But it should never have gotten to that point. You can't let a pitcher just back off the rubber and then start, acting all ridiculous towards an umpire. You can't do it. You can't. All right, so then McPherson comes out for top of five. And again, we feel really good about where we are. And he does the one warm-up pitch and he comes out. We don't know anything officially, but I've had a couple people tell me that he didn't blow out the UCL. And again, I haven't confirmed that with anybody that would know, but I'm told at this point we don't expect it to be season-ending. Going to miss some time. And I had somebody suggest to me that it was a severe forearm strain. That happens. It happened to Nate Dolm, and his was extremely severe. But I don't think we've seen the last of Ryan McPherson this year. And like all of you, we want what's best for Ryan. We want what's best for Mississippi State baseball. And you and I both know with McPherson and Valenkas, we got one of the best 1-2 punches in the country. And so all of you kind of like, oh, man, this is such bad luck. And it is. It is. But hopefully our initial fears will not be realized. We bring in Gleason, and he's barely had enough time to walk out to warm up. And what does he do? He gives a four-pitch walk. And next thing you know, you look up, and Maldonado's on base when he hit by a pitch. And I thought that was a bad call too, right? So, and I asked some people afterwards. Number one, the check swing broke the plane. So it should have been a strike. When you swing and the ball hits you, you don't get a hit by pitch. Well, they said, no, he didn't break the plane. So then it goes back. Well, it's a hit by pitch because it hit him on the hand. Now, the hand's part of the bat, but if you're swinging, it's a strike. If you're not, it's a HBP. So they kind of game the system a little bit. And they review it. No, they give him whatever. And so all of a sudden, we're in trouble. And then Reynolds is hit by the pitch. And so base is loaded, right? Base is loaded here. And you think, man, what a disaster this could prove to be. Well, then Waite lines out to second, And it's a screamer, man. It is. Great play. And then Rigdon grounds into a double play, 6-3, to end the inning. So despite the fact that Jack Gleason went out there, wasn't quite 100%, they load the bases and they get nothing. And those are the half innings that turn boys to men. I'm just going to say it for what it is. Jack Gleason had every opportunity to yield there, but he did not, because he is a competitor. Bulldogs don't do anything in the fifth, and in the sixth, we get in a little trouble again. They get a ground out and a walk, and then Holcomb doubles. Now there's runners at second and third. And give Johnstone a lot of credit, man. He gets down 0-2, and he works a very lengthy at-bat. Gets on base, because if you're Vanderbilt, you need base runners. They get it. And Holcomb didn't do much this weekend. This is probably one of the biggest hits he had. So second and third, one down, and we bring in Maddox Webb. And you got to feel like, hey, you got to get a non-productive out. And we do. We get Mancini. Mike, how do those three L's taste today? He strikes out swinging. Then we walk Barzy to load the bases. And then lo and behold, we get a pop-up to third from Maldonado. And I go back to that whole thing about the hit-by-pitch thing. The baseball gods are watching. So State navigates back-to-back innings where you got multiple runners in scoring position and less than two outs, and we don't give them anything. That's really, I think, in hindsight, where the game was won. They brought in Sieber in place of Fennell, and I thought we knocked Fennell around a good bit. I think he's kind of a Saturday guy masquerading as a Friday guy. All due respect to him. I just think it says a little bit about the lack of depth on the mound that Vanderbilt has. Woodson grounds out to second, and Parker walks. And then Maluski lines out, Chance is hit by the pitch. And I saw a stat earlier that he's been hit by the pitch more than he struck out. That's ridiculous, man. 4-1 is the game as we go to the seventh inning. And again, we get a little bit of trouble here. A one-out walk to the nine-hole hitter typically means trouble. Well, then we walk Rigdon too. So now there's runners at first and second, less than two outs. We bring in Big Ben Davis. He gets a strikeout looking and then a ground out to second. And, man, I told him in postgame, 98-mile-an-hour sinker at the knees is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. We talk about, in baseball terms, we talk about getting under barrels. You can't elevate a 98-mile-per-hour sinker. Now, you can try to get under it, and good luck with that. But it's nearly physically impossible to take a 98-mile-per-hour sinker at the knee, at the bottom part of the knee, and lift that thing and elevate it. It's such a heavy baseball. So we get out of it, you know. And, again, Bulldog bullpen stepping up here. State does nothing in the seventh. Bandy gets a one-out walk in the eighth. And then Maldonado doubles to left center. It chases in Mancini. He makes it 4-2. So now if you're Vandy, you're thinking, hey, man, we're still in the fight. And we needed an answer here. We didn't, though. We get two outs. Parker singles back up the middle. Maluski's in hit by the pitch. So we have an important insurance run at second. And then Bryce Chance doesn't come through. One of the rare instances when Bryce Chance doesn't come through with two outs and runners on. But it's 4-2 going to the ninth, and Ben Davis just, I mean, mows people down here. He gets ahead 0-2, gets a line out to third. Rigdon goes down swinging, and Johnson grounds out to third. That's your ballgame. Bulldogs win it 4-2. And, of course, the immediate concern goes to Ryan McPherson. I mean, it's like, yeah, we won. It's great to get a Friday night win. But everybody's worried about Ryan, and rightfully so. Jack Gleason credited with the win. Connor Fennell's first loss of the year. Ben Davis credited with the save. But it wasn't a huge offensive night for the Bulldogs. Noah Sullivan goes 2-for-3 in the ballgame. He is your hitting hero. State just gets eight hits in the ballgame. And, of course, Ryder Woodson with the big home run there. Pretty significant, right? The power early in this ballgame is what made the difference. But, again, Ryan McPherson, great effort. Four innings pitched, two hits, the one run, four Ks, one walk, and a lot of flyouts. Like, when Ryan's on his game, he's going to get flyouts, right? Because he's got some rise to that fastball, so people are hitting the bottom half of the baseball, a lot of pop-ups, routine fly balls. And again, Jack Gleason had the issue with a couple walks there and a couple of hit-by-pitches, but gets the win, 1.1 innings, and allows no runs on one hit. Maddox Webb charged with three walks, but yields, again, no runs. And then Ben Davis, of course, comes in, does some nice things. We had a chance to get out of that thing a little bit easier, but we didn't. But the reality of it is State wins 4-2, and that evened our SEC record with Vanderbilt at 2-2. Now we get into game two, and Wyatt Nadeau, who was the SEC Freshman of the Week, last.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Last week was on the bump, so we weren't exactly sure what to expect from him. But we knew that Tomas Valenkas was pitching for us, so we knew what to expect from him. And we felt like maybe it'd be a pitching duel. I really felt like our crowd rattled the young freshman from Vanderbilt. And there were a couple times he just kind of stepped off the mound and kind of reset, which is supposed to be a pitch and clock violation. One of the things that I want to share with you guys too, when we get a pitcher on the ropes, we cannot stop the maroon and white cheer. When the maroon and white cheer starts, everybody's emotions get a little bit elevated. And then what Vandy did is they would just throw to first base. And then we'd stop the maroon and white cheer. We can't do that. The crowd has to be relentless, especially when you got a guy on the ropes. Just keep cheering. Keep cheering. Don't let it die down, because that's what teams are going to do. It's like, oh, this crowd's getting crazy. Let's just throw to first, or we'll throw to second. Then they'll be quiet. Don't be quiet. Don't be quiet. All right, nothing doing for Vandy in the first. Bulldogs get a little traction on the bases here. We get the leadoff walk there, and then Sully doubles. Runners at second and third, but we can't get them in. We got two runners in scoring position with less than two outs, and we can't get a ball to find some green grass for us. Top of second, they get a hit by pitch with two down. Not much happens for them. Bottom of second, this is when State kind of gets loose and begins to stretch her legs a little bit. Back-to-back walks. And you love that, right? Back-to-back walks. And then Maluski's going to bunt here and get the sack bunt down. Instead, he beats it out. And that's a big man lumbering down first base. Now, all of a sudden, base is loaded. Bryce Chance steps up, has a job to do. He swings the bat, and this doesn't get it deep enough. You know, kind of gets under the baseball a little bit. Infield fly to shortstop. So now they're a pitch away from getting out of it. And then Teal singles deep to second. The run scores, making it 1-0. And then Ace Reese comes up, doesn't even hesitate, rips the ball down there in the right field corner, two runs score to make it 3-0. Sully's then hit, and then Fry walks. And Stallman has an RBI sack fly to make it 4-0. And then Fry walks. And so, again, the fire's lit. And we come right back out, and it's a 1-2-3 inning as Valenka strikes out the side. We get a leadoff single in the third and then ground into a double play. And then Bryce Chance with two outs tries to keep it going, singles to center, and then Teal grounds out. Top of four, Vandy gets on the board here. They reach on an error. Then there's a pass ball. So it's like we've kind of manufactured some misery here, right? Then you get Holcomb to go down swinging. Barcy singles to put runners at the corners. Maldonado walks to load the bases. And then Mancini flies out to left, RBI. Good job, right? And then Rigdon singles to center field, the leadoff hitter. And I guess he was moved down the lineup that day, now I think about it. And run scores, unearned. And so it's a 4-2 ball game. And, you're just kind of working through it here. And, again, they're thinking we're back in the fight. Well, Sully gets one of those runs right back. The only hit we have in the bottom of four is a solo shot to make it 5-2. Top five, it's a 1-2-3 inning for Vandy. And, again, Valinka's just absolutely cruising right here. All right, bottom of five, we have an early threat. We get a walk to Goodson. They bring in Guth, who is probably their best reliever. Wild pitches, our guy to second. So you got a runner in scoring position, nobody out. We can't get him home. Parker walks, Maluski pops up the bunt. Chance infield fly, and then Teal flies out. And so, again, that's two situations here. Even though we won the game, we could have been a little more efficient offensively. But with a 5-2 lead, I'm sure it felt like 10-2 in that Vandy dugout. 1-2-3 inning for Vandy in top of six. State goes 1-2-3 in the sixth. Vandy again, 1-2-3 in the seventh. Bottom of seventh, Stake picks up some much-needed insurance runs here because then all of a sudden one swing can't tie you, right? Fryline's out, but then Woodson doubles inside the bag. Parker then walks, great at bat there. Maluski flies out, and with two outs and two on, it's Bryce Chance doubling down the third baseline. Again, doing what Bryce does. Three bean salad, right? And 7-2 ball game. As we go to the eighth, 1-2-3 there is Sweeney comes in, and a nice return to form for Brendan Sweeney. 1-2-3 inning for them. We get a one-out walk in the eighth, can't do anything with it. We get to the ninth, kind of make some defensive changes here. They also, made a couple pinch hitting opportunities here, but Holcomb goes down swinging. Barzy then doubles down the left field line. Good at bat for him, and he's a guy that hadn't played a whole lot since he banged up that shoulder against Eastern Michigan. Didn't catch, but he DH'd throughout the weekend. Pinch hitter Gooden grounded out to first. Mancini then walks, and Rigdon grounds out to second. That's a ball game, folks. That's your ball game. So the series is now secured at this point, and we're feeling good. But, man, if you were like me, I just felt like there was blood in the water. I knew that unless Nye pitched for them, and he's missed his spot in the rotation three straight weeks now, Nate Taylor had five starts and was 0-3 in an ERA north of 7. I just felt like there's just nobody left. There's nobody left. And so you really felt like, hey, we know that Duke can give us four or five great innings. Offense will probably get some separation in this game, and they did. And we'll get to that shortly. But, again, Sully, 2-for-3 in the ball game, run scored an RBI and a walk. And then Bryce Chance, 2-for-4 with a couple RBI. Just 9 hits in the ball game for State, but very efficient what we did. If State wins this game, well, Wyatt Nadeau, again, last week's SEC Freshman of the Week, gives up 5 earned runs on 7 hits. Walked 5, struck out 4. Also hit a batter. Luke Guth, their best reliever, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, no strikeouts. And then Thomas Valenkis, if there hadn't been a complete game no-hitter thrown Alabama versus Florida, Valenkis is your SEC Pitcher of the Week again. And, guys, he went 7 innings, 103 pitches. Fairly efficient, right? Gives up 2 hits, 2 runs. Neither of them earned. 14 Ks against 1 walk-up. Yeah, it's great numbers. And then Sweeney comes in, goes 2 full, allows 1 hit, no runs, 3 Ks against 1 walk. So, again, 126 pitches thrown by your Bulldogs. And happy with the series win, but you were like me. We had to finish, and we felt like they would make up for one of those games that we dropped at Arkansas that we probably shouldn't. Tyler Baird, a freshman, gets a start, and I'm not second-guessing, and I first-guessed this, and I told some people on the road, I can't believe they're going to send out a true freshman. Granted, the Sunday crowds at Duty Noble are not what they are on Saturday, okay? A lot of people that go to church, and it's just part of life. When we set records, they're on Saturdays. That understood. That crowd that he would see on Sunday is probably 4 to 5 times bigger than anything he's going to see at Vanderbilt all year. And so to send that guy out for his first SEC start in that environment with that weight on his shoulders that, hey, we've got to get a win, we've lost two, that's a lot to ask. Now, at the end of the day, at some point, every SEC pitcher has gone through that. It's kind of an annual rite of passage for freshmen. But, man, this was tough. This was hard to see. Top of one, Vandy gets a two-out single, can do nothing with it. Bottom of one, at a 1-1 count, Teal's hit by the pitch. And then Reese walks, nearly hit him. They have a mound visit, sullied and singles through the right side. Run scores, now runners at first and second. Wild pitch, both guys move up. And then Stallman singles to center field. Run scores, 2-0. Then Fry singles to center field. It's 3-0. Well, that's it. 20 pitches, Baird faced 5 hitters, all 5 of them reached, and ultimately all 5 would score. Woodson pops up a bunt. I may need to take over that. And then Parker reaches on a fielder's choice. Malewski homers to left, makes it a 6-0 ball game. And right before he did, we're 3-0, I was like, I told Mike, I said, man, I wish we'd have got more out of this inning. I just wish we could have got more out of this. And then Malewski homers. Kevin's like, I got it, Steve. I got it. 6-0. All right, top of second. And we've done a little bit of this year. And I think some of this, maybe it's coming from O'Connor, maybe it's coming from Parker. And it's sound baseball for the most part. When you get the big lead, you just want to pound the zone. Because solo home runs are not going to beat you. Well, they had 3 of them in the next half inning. Top of second, 1 out. And then Mancini homers to center. 2-0 count. You get predictable. The guy guesses right. Then Rigdon, not necessarily a big home run hitter, just kind of pokes one right down the right field line where it's about 305. That gets out. Reynolds goes down swinging, and then Waite, the 9-hole hitter, first pitch, he homers to right center. Of course, the wind's blowing out 10 to 15 miles an hour to right field, so really anything that got above the grandstand had a chance to get out. That happened for us, too. 6-3 is the score. And Duke gets out of it and then settles down after that, right? And Bulldogs answer and kind of give him some margin to work with. With 2 out, it's Noah Sullivan starting a 2-out rally. Gets a 2-0 count, gets a ball he can handle. He pushes it the other way. And then Stallman got under that ball, but, man, there was no doubt about it off the bat, especially with the wind blowing out. Now it's 8-3. And that's so demoralizing, right? If you're Vanderbilt, it's like, hey, man, we're down 6-0. Oh, we got 3 jacks. We got plenty of ball game left. And then State gets 2 of those runs right back. It's just so demoralizing for a team. All right, 1-2-3 for Duke in the third. Nice bounce back inning for him. Very efficient with the pitches, too. Ends up being, what is this, an 8-pitch inning? Yeah, you got to love that. All right, bottom of third, State starts tacking on here. And it's Woodson that gets it started. And they throw the ball away. Pretty crazy. He comes around to third base, and then they walk Parker, who ended up being your SEC Freshman of the Week. How about that? Malewski flies out, and then Woodson tags and scores. Chanson singles to the shortstop. It's a 9-3 ball game. Till strikes out. They decide to go ahead and bring Taylor in, who has been their regular Sunday starter in place of Kranzler, and the first thing he does is issue a 4-pitch walk to H. Reese. That does not inspire a lot of confidence. And then Sully singles to left field. 2 runs score, it's 11-3. They've seen all they needed to see. They go out and get the only left-hander they've thrown the entire year, Schultz, try to get out of it. And then Stallman, first pitch, looking breaking ball, rips it down the line and right. It's 12-3, and now we're thinking this is going to be a 7-inning ball game. It proved to be, but it was in doubt for a little while. Top of four, Vandy kind of easing back in a little bit, and again, leadoff walks. They'll get you. But we get the next two guys, and we get the pop-up. And listen, Ryder's got to catch this. He'll tell you the same. 0-2, a chance to get out of the inning, and we drop a pop fly. Now, granted, he had to run a long way. That's not an easy play, and I would have given him a hit, too. Other people are like, are you kidding me? It's not a routine play. However, they initially called it a hit, reversed it later. But it kept hope alive for them. And then Johnstone homers down the right field line. Now it's 12-6. So we're a pop fly away from getting out of this 12-3, and now it's 12-6. And again, now there's hope in the Vandy dugout. State gets one of those runs back here in the fourth. Woodson, you know, the guy that made the error, atones for it with a, inning-opening double here to left center. Parker grounds out to second, which allows Woodson to move up. Ground ball to the right side. Maluski strikes out. And with two outs, again, in a runner in scoring position, who do you want up there? Yeah, Bryce Chance. He doubles to left. Now it's now a 13-6 ball game. Teal closes it out. Top of five, we bring in Charlie Foster. 1-2-3 inning for him. He was fairly efficient, too. Got three ground ball outs with the defense work. And then bottom of five, Ace Reese. Probably the home run that may have surprised him the most, right? He just kind of gets under it. It looks like it's going to be a routine fly ball, but, man, the wind kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Now it's 14-6. That's it. They go get Faulkner in place of Schultz. That's left on left with Reese and Schultz. Faulkner gets out of it. Now it's 14-6. Top of six. Again, we're kind of having some issues ourselves here. We hit Mancini. Then we walk Rigdon. It's like we just can't finish, right? Wickham then singles up the middle, drives a run home. It's now 14-7. Wade grounds out on the bunt. Wade is in what happens here is he bunts the ball into fair territory and then runs into it. You're protected in the box. If the ball hits you in the box, you're okay. But once the ball leaves the home plate area and you touch it, it's a live ball, so you're out. And that's what happened. And give the home plate umpire a lot of credit. He was right on it immediately. And then from there, John Stone strikes out swinging, and we said, you know what, let's go pull Charlie now. And we bring in Tyler Pitzer, and he gets a line out to left, and that ball was hit pretty well. All right, bottom of six. They pull Reynolds and let Whitcomb stay in the game. He has been somewhat of a regular catcher for them. And then Woodson, again, atoning for that earlier error, hits a home run to left field. I joked with him afterwards. I said, if you'd done 10 more push-ups, that other one would have been out. Parker then singles to center. Maluski goes down swinging. Chance singles to center field and run scores. Yep. And, again, we kind of had some opportunities here late to expand the lead, but we don't. But it's now 16-7. Top of seven. Barcy, again, I know they're thrilled to have him back in the lineup. And even if he's not behind the plate, they have a serviceable catcher. We get a single to center field off of Pitzer. Then Maldonado goes down swinging. Holcomb lines out to left. Mancini grounds back to the pitcher. And here we go. Bottom of seven. Bulldogs have a chance to walk this thing off. And we do. And we do. They make some defensive changes. Stallman opens up with a double down the line. You think, oh, here it is. Fry singles through the left side, which sends Stallman to third. Woodson grounds out to first, which allows the runner to take second. They intentionally walk Parker to set up a double play. Maluski flies out to center, and lo and behold, almost like we wrote it this way, Bryce Chance comes up. Again, two outs, runners in scoring position, and singles to left field. The run scores. We walk it off 17-7. Nice day for your nine-hole hitter, who may be, again, the best nine-hole hitter in the country. And kind of answering his critics, too. Like, a lot of people thought Bryce wouldn't even be able to play. Oh, they're going to recruit over him. Guys, there's some games we don't win without Bryce Chance. He has become such a valuable member of this lineup. Bulldogs, 17 runs on 19 hits. Just a couple of errors in the game. Of course, the one from State on the drop pop fly there. But Noah Sullivan goes 3-for-5. Again, great weekend for him. Ace Reese scored three runs in that ballgame. Got walked three times. Reed Stallman, 4-for-5. Four RBI. Couple runs scored. Derek Fry, 2-for-5. Ryder Woodson, 3-for-5. Parker, 1-for-3. Kevin Maluski, 1-for-4. Of course, had that sack fly, too, to drive in an RBI. Bryce Chance goes 4-for-5. Three ribbies for him. Again, it's just up and down the order. And that's one of the things that I think is important for our fans to understand. It is going to be difficult for teams to beat us on Sunday with back-of-the-bullpen guys. This offense is just too good. And, yeah, we're going to have some games, especially on Friday nights, when it takes us a while to find it. But Sundays, especially when teams like those games are somewhat competitive on Friday, Saturday, so they have to throw better bullpen arms on Friday and Saturday to kind of try to get a hold and keep the game where it is. And you get into Sunday, it turns into a church league softball game. And that's what happened on Sunday. And Bulldogs do a good job putting them away. And again, we hadn't swept Vanderbilt since 2000. So that's huge. And again, these are two programs going in opposite directions. I don't care what anybody in the national college baseball media says. Vandy's run is over. It's over. As I mentioned, Tyler Baird does not get recorded out. Gives up 3 hits, 5 earned runs. His ERA is now infinity and beyond. Again, 20 pitches to 5 hitters. Rough, man. Duke Stone goes 4 innings. He's credited with the win because we only play 7. He does give up 6 runs. 3 of them earned, and because of that 3-run jack that came after the drop pop-up. And, you know, again, you're not going to beat up Ryder for this because Ryder's played really well for us. But you got to make the play, right? Charlie Foster goes 1 2/3 of an inning, allows 1 run on 1 hit, 1 strikeout, 1 walk, and did have a hit by pitch. And that's kind of been the thing with Charlie. Like, it's kind of like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde. Like, he'll go out there and he has a great inning, and then we have an inning that is a little bit unsettled. We're like, he loses the release point, something mechanically. I don't think it's all nerves. I think it's just him kind of learning to repeat that delivery. Tyler Pitzer goes 1 1/3, allows just 1 hit, gets 1 strikeout, very efficient, 5 hitters, and on 13 pitches. You know, you love that. And I think Tyler Pitzer's got to be a bigger part of things as we kind of move forward. So that's your weekend series. And again, Bulldogs win all three. And congratulations to all of you that picked the sweep. And we all enjoyed the sweep. And I can tell you it was a very jovial Bulldog baseball team as they left Polk DeMint Stadium on Sunday, taking care of business. I thought O'Connor said it best. We proved to ourselves we can finish these things out. And we did. All right. Time for our close with Blair, Player of the Weekend. Brought to you by our friend Blair Chandler. He's my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. You never know when you're going to need somebody to do some of the heavy lifting to kind of remove some stress for your life. And buying a home can be stressful. Having to relocate is stressful, period. It is. No matter what the reasons are, it's tough. Make your life a little bit easier. Take some stress out of your life. Trust Blair Chandler. 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. Save that number in your phone as Mortgage Guy. You may not remember the name, but you're always going to know the need, right? So when it pops up, you're ready to roll. You already have that. I've got a Mortgage Guy. Yes, you do. You do. And he's a Bulldog through and through. He's happy with the direction of the baseball program, shall we say. And who couldn't be, right? But Blair is a guy that's been at this for 25 years. Get his expertise and know-how working for you. Let him do the heavy lifting. Because getting a loan through underwriting can be complicated. You know, sometimes they want a lock of your kid's hair from their first haircut, a note from your mom, pint of blood. He can kind of cut through all the noise. And when it feels like they're asking for things that aren't required, he can say, hey, listen, I wrote this loan exactly in accordance with the underwriting guidelines. Here's where we're going to go, right? Yeah, you need a winner, and you got one in Blair Chandler. So whether it's your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, Blair Chandler, the only name to know, and perhaps that game day condo. Maybe more affordable than you think. Hit up Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. Okay, we got a lot of options we could go here. I'm going to go with Noah Sullivan, and I'm going to tell you why. There were a couple times that Noah started some two-out rallies. There were times that Noah just kind of did what the pitchers gave him. One of the things that I love about Noah is willing to let the ball travel and take it the other way. I don't know if we've had anybody in recent years that does a better job of filling the backside gap. I mean, he really works hard on the backside, and that's what mature hitters do. Yeah, he's got a couple jacks too. He does. But he also has been a guy that can hit for average and just to extend innings and pass the bat back. And I think that needs to be commended. Tremendous effort from Noah Sullivan. You know, we could have gone Bryce Chance, could have gone Thomas Valenkas. But I just felt like that maybe Noah was kind of an unheralded hero this weekend. So let's shout him out today as your close with Blair, Player of the Weekend. Now it's time for today's top 10 list, again by request. And it's a modified request. A lot of guitar in this one. A lot of guitar. And there should be. You need more guitar in your life. You can find guitars and all your guitar accessories at a discount at my partner, ColitoGuitars.com. Based out of Lake Jackson, Texas, their expansive showroom has everything you want. It's true. They provide everything but the practice time. So what you want to do is visit ColitoGuitars.com. Go check out the website. Start doing some window shopping, even if you're not quite ready. But maybe you are. And once you get there and you see the fact that what the prices are, you say, well, maybe I'm a little more ready than I thought. And there's some truth in that. They're not trying to make a killing. They're just trying to make a living, right? And they're not going to hold you hostage when it comes to great instruments or accessories. You know, whether it's gig bags and cases, cables, strings, anything you need, it's all going to be so professionally installed. The service is exemplary. The prices are great. Now, even if you didn't have the promo code, Kalito Guitars is the way to go. But since you have the promo code, it just removes all doubt about where you need to buy your next instrument, or perhaps your first instrument. Visit KalitoGuitars.com or stop by the showroom or call them on the phone. As shared recently, there was a guy that's been playing 30 years, always wanted a nylon string guitar, got it set up exactly to his own specifications. This is the guitar player's guitar shop. So, promo code is BSR. We wanted to keep it simple. It's one you know, right? I don't want you having to scribble all these things down or text me or whatever. You know, Steve, what's the promo code? It's BSR, right? So, that's going to get you 10% discount off their already low price. That's going to get you no sales tax unless you live in the great state of Texas. That's going to get you free shipping. That's going to get you set up free, right? And in addition to that, they're going to give you a 5% donation to the Bulldog Excellence Fund based on your purchase price. I'm extremely happy with every piece of guitar equipment I've gotten from them. I've got a gig bag. I've got a Steve Vai Signature original guitar that I've always wanted. A dream come true for me to have that guitar. And in addition to that, I've got a guitar stand that just kind of protects it. You don't want your guitar just laying around under a bed. It's not good for the neck. It's just not. Okay, that's just the reality of life. So buy a guitar from a place that plays guitar. It's not just a place that sells guitar, right? That's the guitar player shop, KalitoGuitars.com. Okay, Greg hits me up and says, Steve, I don't remember you doing Saliva. Well, Greg was wrong. I've done Saliva. However, we can always put a little more Saliva in our lives because when I did the list, it was all the Josie Scott era. And Josie shot a video for us when Danny was coming home from New Mexico, which was super cool. We have some friends that in common. You know, he's out of Memphis. The band was founded in Bartlett, Tennessee. But they've done some cool stuff post-Josie. And I stumbled across a great song this weekend. And so Greg's request kind of comes at a good time. It's been around kind of lingering for a while. And so when I began to kind of scroll through, I said, I remember somebody requesting it. Sure enough, it was Greg. I won't give you the full name. I'm not going to embarrass you, Greg, even though you shouldn't be embarrassed to be a fan of Saliva. Great rock and roll band. Of course, Josie was with them from 2000 to 2005. And then needed to take some time off the road to kind of get his life together, get clean and sober, was going to do a Christian music album, then he was going to do a country album, and then he was going to reunite with Saliva, and so things didn't work out. Then he had told me and Dana he was going to do another band. I'm trying to remember the name of the, what it was going to be called. Anyway, something with Violet in it, but anyway, I decided, Greg, and to all of our dear listeners, what if we did a top 10 of Saliva collaborations? Because the song that I found over the weekend is a great kind of reimagined version of a Saliva song that doesn't feature Josie Scott. And I said, you know what? I can put this thing together. Greg, you came to the right place. Okay, so number 10, this is one of those songs of the post-Josie era. And they collaborated with Peyton Parrish, who has kind of become a kind of a Christian rock artist. You wouldn't know it to listen to their music, though. It sounds very worldly, as some would say in the church. But a great track called Time Bomb. But he doesn't do a lot of secular music anymore. And that's really the headline there. All right, number 9. We've talked a lot about Brad Arnold. And I think we've actually featured this song during our Brad Arnold Memoriam section. But Brad from Three Doors Down teamed up with Saliva to do Razor's Edge. And I think if you like Three Doors Down, you're going to love it. If you like Saliva and Three Doors Down, it's probably one that needs to be on your playlist. Okay, number eight. Now, Saliva collaborated with a band called Fallen Within. Now, this is a little more aggressive song for Saliva. They kind of step out of their comfort zone a little bit, and the track is called Worlds Apart. And Bobby Amaro, the new vocalist for Saliva, is the guest voice on this. Another collaboration with the Butcher Babies, and I'm a huge Carla Harvey fan. She's not with them anymore. You know, she married Charlie Benante, and she's got some other stuff going on. She's fronting Lords of Acid right now, in addition to her band, The Violet Hour. And love her. Number one, she's incredibly gorgeous, but she's also incredibly talented. She's the winning combo, and Charlie's an incredibly lucky man. But prior to her departure, the Butcher Babies did a song called Sincerity with Saliva. And it is a little more aggressive. It is. If you know Butcher Babies, you know exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, you see Heidi and Carla Harvey on stage, and you think, oh, this is just going to be like you know, Britney Spears on steroids. It's not. It's not at all. Okay, number six. For many of you, this was kind of your gateway song to Josie Scott. When he was with Saliva, he teamed up with Chad Kroeger from Nickelback. They were contemporaries, obviously, and this song was a huge hit from the Spider-Man original motion picture soundtrack. It's Hero. Hero. That's number six on your list. Okay, a couple years ago, Saliva decided, hey, we're going to do a new album, but we're going to kind of remaster some songs and change it a little bit. And on that album, they did recovered their own song, Horizon. And it's called Horizon Retold. And guess who they brought in? They bring in Kevin Martin from Candlebox. How cool is that? What a collaboration that you never thought you needed, but there it is. That's number five. Number four, really kind of a sad song, to be honest with you. And they teamed up with the original vocalist of Hinder, Austin John Walker. And Too Broke to Fix is the name of the track. It's one of those self-loathing songs for a segment of our fan base. I guess it could be a theme song of sorts. But it is a very, very, very good song. Very. All right, number three, and this is going back a few years, back in the Josie era, Nikki Sixx wrote and produced this song. He and a couple of his buddies from 6 a.m. were kind of collaborators on this, even though Nikki doesn't sing or play. They just wrote it. And it's kind of a take on a familiar phrase. It's rest in pieces. But it's really more about our protagonist. Like a guy's broken up with a girl, and he's like, hey, just you know, give me this so I can rest in pieces. Right? And so an interesting track. I'm not sure if it was originally going to be a 6 a.m. track or not. Wasn't going to be a Motley track because Nikki wasn't working with Motley then. But it is a song I think is very interesting. Number two. And this is what led us here, Greg. It's High on Me Retold off of you know, that album that we talked about moments ago. Just kind of changing some things up. And that's one of the things I think is interesting, too. I like when bands kind of give a different look at what they're doing. You know, they go back and just kind of look at all this and kind of change some things up. And you know, it was originally released on the Revelation album. And then they kind of changed some things up. And Saliva has a new single out, too, that came out earlier this month called Starless. I don't know if you've checked it out yet, but you should. Right? Giving you fresh music every show. But High on Me, I love the industrial part of this, but one of the things that I love the most about this song is they introduce a female vocalist in the second verse. And it is really hard to describe. I did not know anything about her until I heard this song. And so I went and checked out her band. And that's the reason you do it, right? It's true. It's true. And she's from Toronto. It's Lauren Babick. That's her name. And don't let the pretty face fool you. She's got her own band called Red Handed Denial. And she also works with Crazy 88, which is kind of a hardcore band. But Red Handed Denial is kind of her major project at this point. And so she collaborates here. And again, I had never heard of her, but now she's got a few listens from me because of this incredible version. High on Me retold, that's your number two track. But number one, and you know my history with Shinedown. You know how much I love those guys. And for those of you that like watch wrestling, you're familiar with this track. It's Don't Question My Heart, featuring Brent Smith from Shinedown. I absolutely love this track. And like when I want to grit my teeth and drive fast and just kind of hate, you know what I'm saying? This is one of those songs that I put on. And it is, if you're a workout person or a running person, I think this is a song that'll work for you too. Don't Question My Heart, Prepare to Fight. Love it, man. And Brent kills the vocal. And then Josie kind of does some fill-in stuff too. It's just, it's great. It's great. So there you go, Greg. I hope you're happy with the list. Why it wasn't your traditional top 10 of Saliva. I think I've given you some things to kind of hang on to here that you maybe you're not quite as familiar with. But for the rest of you, if you have ideas for the top 10 list, and of course we've done, I think, three requests in a row. If you have ideas, hit me up. And if we've already done them, we can do kind of a reimagined list like we've done with Greg. I love you guys. I want to give you guys something to feel good about, and I want you to know that I hear you. So hit up Roy Samanti on X at Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. I took Roy to have pizza here about a week ago, and that's his annual pay. So we've got him paid up for a year. Let's use him, okay? And you can find our great list on Spotify or that same handle, Dogmatic67, DAWGMATIC67. And you can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. We love Campus Bookmart. And why? Well, they got the things we want, right? We're not complicated people. When it's our birthday or an anniversary gift or whatever, just give us more Mississippi State merch. We're going to be happy. Don't overthink it. Don't try to get cute. Get us something from Campus Bookmart. It's just that simple. I'm speaking on behalf of Bulldog fans everywhere to gift buyers around the world. If you want to make us happy when it's time to buy us something, Father's Day, Mother's Day, whatever, Amerigo Vespucci Day, whatever, get us more Mississippi State merch. You can find the best selection of Mississippi State merchandise at Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. You'll be glad you did. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's Internet, at campusbookmart.net. You can outfit the family in all the newest M over S fashions, too. You can get you a university stadium-approved cooler there, too, right? May be a good investment. Save you some money over the course of a long hot season, and you're going to be spending a lot of time at Duty Noble. So maybe that's the way to go. But if you need those new MSU T-shirts, you can find them there. And, of course, it's never too early to start thinking about football season, too. You know, think about hoodies, think about that quarter zip, or just a polo shirt. You can find everything you need to make the Bulldog fans in your life incredibly happy at Campus Bookmart. They sell everything but championships. Yeah, it's true. Campus Bookmart. All right, let's take a look around the league. Last time we were together, we had a couple series that started early. You know, LSU and Oklahoma, Ole Miss and Kentucky. Those Thursday games didn't go the way we wanted. Some of these series didn't go the way we wanted. However, on Friday, we'll run through the Friday scores and we'll take it to the weekend and then we'll summarize. But Missouri goes in Knoxville and doubles up Tennessee 8-4. 12 hits for the Tigers in that ballgame. J.D. Dorman with the win. Blaze Ward also 3-for-4 in the ballgame. As Missouri kind of shocks everybody, right? Maybe they are getting better. Who knows? Wild game, Texas and Auburn. Now, there's a couple things I want to say about this one, okay? Some people have said Auburn probably should have been swept. But I'm going to say no, and here's why. You had that crazy play. You had a sinking line drive hit the center. The tying run's going to score anyway, right? Period. And you never know what's going to happen from there. The ball gets through the center fielder's legs. Aiden Robbins goes all the way to the wall. And the winning run scores. And then the shortstop makes a Bush League play, throws that ball to home, even though the game is over. And, yeah, you know, I saw some people said, you know what, he should wear one tomorrow. I agree. You can't do that Bush League stuff. But Auburn walks it off and wins 4-3. Great job by the Auburn pitching staff, too. They were down 3-2 in the ninth, but Texas only had three hits in the ballgame. So great job by the Auburn pitching staff, for sure. Georgia, we worried a little bit about their ability to travel. It's always been a bit of a challenge because they hit the baseball so well at Foley. They had no problem with Texas A&M. 9-4 winners, 15 hits. I mean, again, bats tend to travel. And it was all Georgia early. They jumped up 3-0 in the first. It's 4-0 midway through the second. Texas A&M gets on the board, makes it a game again. A&M lets Georgia tack on. And the next thing you know, the game gets away from them. And Georgia did what good teams do. Late in the ball game, they kept extending that lead. Yeah, it's a 7-2 ball game going into the ninth. And then Georgia with two and A&M with two. But Gavin Grahovic with 2-for-4 ninth, 3 RBI. Of course, Arkansas destroys South Carolina. And the next day, Paul Maneri gets fired. Gabe Gackel picks up the win. This goes 5 innings, 7 Ks, allows 2 runs as Arkansas rolls 22-6. And again, I think it's pretty safe to say that maybe that South Carolina team had kind of quit on Paul. But it's not a very talented roster. But 22-6, brutal, man. Guys, it was 17-0 before South Carolina got a run on the board. Alabama, Tyler Fay, your SEC Pitcher of the Week, and rightfully so. 9 innings pitched, 13 Ks, what, 132 pitches thrown? And they shut out and no-hit Florida. I don't think many people expected that to happen, but that is exactly what happened. And, of course, Florida was ranked 18th in the country then. Oklahoma and LSU, that series evens up 4-2. And we've talked about this extensively. Oklahoma's got pretty good pitching. Maybe not dominant pitching. They don't have a Kyson Witherspoon this year, but Skip Johnson's always going to have guys that compete in the strike zone. And L.J. Mercurius gets the win. He's now 5-1. And maybe the best pitcher you don't know. But to go in Alex Box Stadium and hold them to 2 runs, that's significant. And LSU hurt themselves with a couple of errors. Lose that ballgame 4-2 to even the series up. Kentucky evens it up with Ole Miss with a 3-1 win. And again, Jackson Jelkin, great job here. He goes 7 innings, allows just 1 run, 6 Ks. Judd Uedermark had one of Ole Miss's 4 hits. But that's a good Ole Miss offense, which makes Jelkin's job look even better. They win it 3-1. And, of course, your Bulldogs win 4-2. So we get into Saturday's action. And, of course, a couple of these series are ending on Saturday. Of course, part of it, one of those, Ole Miss and Kentucky, a little bit of a wild one here. Kentucky gets 6 in the 5th to make it an 8-5 ball game. And you think, okay, well, then Ole Miss puts up a crooked number the next or two of the next 3 innings, and they win it 12-9. 12-9 is your final, and ultimately Ole Miss takes the series. Will Furness, 3-for-5 in that ball game. Feels like he's been there forever. It's true. Oklahoma. Huge road series for them, and I think this pays dividends for them down the road. A lot of people thought Oklahoma, including myself, would be middle of the road this year. To get a series win on the road at a place like LSU, and you know, come mid-April, LSU will start pushing the right buttons, and it'll be tough. But Oklahoma wins at 4-3. They had to come from behind with 3 in the 8th to win that. Cleveland Jackson wins the game in relief. Jackson Cleveland. And then Camden Johnson, 2-for-4 in the ball game with a home run. Tigers now 16-9 overall, 2-for-4 in the SEC. And this is where you start thinking, if you're LSU, it's time to start panicking and thinking about no postseason baseball, Alex Box. A lot of baseball left to be played. A lot of tough series coming up too. Alabama, game 2 winners, 8-4 over Florida. Blake Sear, a guy that a lot of people thought was going to be just a difference maker for Florida, really hadn't been, but he was 2-for-4 in this ball game. Zane Adams goes 6 innings, ups his record to 4-1. Brady Neal, 3-for-5 in the ball game with 3 RBI. That's your hitting hero at 3 of Alabama's 8 hits. But the game, the score is not truly indicative of how Alabama dominated this game. Florida scores 2 in the ninth. This game is over. going into the ninth. I mean, it's a 6-run lead in the ninth. Georgia takes the series from A&M, 8-2 winners. And again, Georgia, 11 hits, so double-digit hits, back-to-back days. And I think A&M is just okay, right? I think beginning of the year when we did our preseason preview, we said we thought that A&M was a little bit overrated. I think some of that, too, is because so many people in the national college baseball media know Mike, and they want A&M to be good. I think they're just okay. Arkansas, wild game here, too. South Carolina, an opportunity to win the game in the ninth. They get a ground ball to second. They throw it away. And the tying run scores, and then Arkansas wins it in the 10th, 3-2. Cole Gibbler got it pitched against us. He goes 3-0, 3.1 innings pitched, does not allow a run. Damian Ruiz hit a solo shot for Arkansas. And hits were at a premium in this ballgame, just 12 between the two teams. And a huge error. I mean, in South Carolina, levels out at 12-12 and 0-5 in the SEC. And, of course, your Bulldogs win 7-2. Texas evens the series with Auburn. 7-6 is your final. But it was 6-0 early until they got in the middle innings and then Auburn began to kind of get on the board. But then Texas answers. But 3 runs in the seventh makes it a little bit interesting. And then 1 in the 8th, and you feel like Auburn had a chance. They went to the 9th just down 1. Couldn't get it done. A couple of big errors, too, for Auburn in this game. Tennessee evens it with Missouri, and it was a come-from-behind performance for Tennessee. Missouri gets up 2-0 in the second, and then Tennessee tacks on 1 in the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th to make it a 3-2 ball game, and then they get the final run there in the 6th. But Missouri knocked the ball around the yard a little bit. They just couldn't piece it together. 8 hits. They actually out-hit Tennessee. Henry Ford, a guy that chose Tennessee over Mississippi State, just goes 1-for-4 of Tennessee. All right, getting into your Sunday games. Alabama completes the sweep of Florida, and you recall, you know, Kentucky swept Alabama last week, and then Florida, of course, they swept last week too, and so turnabout is fair play. It's interesting how baseball works sometimes. But Florida jumps out to a good start, gets up 4-0, and the next thing you know, they just run out of pitching. Alabama with 2 in the 5th to make it a 4-2 game, and then 7 in the 6th. And really from there, they just kind of took charge. Florida answered back with 3 in the bottom of the 7th, and then Alabama with 5 to win it 14-7. Florida held it to 6 hits. Pitching not really working well for them. Offense isn't doing much to help them. Tennessee does take the series for Missouri. Much better game. But again, Tennessee not scoring with near the same frequency they did under Tony Botello. But it's a 4-0 ball game before Missouri gets on the board, and ultimately the Volunteers win it 7-1 to take the split. South Carolina rises from the doldrums, wins their first SEC game of the year. They beat Arkansas. That's good for us, right? Because we're going to get a chance to play South Carolina, too. We want to keep everybody around us as best we can. But South Carolina just goes to work, and they score in all 4 of the first innings of this ball game. It's a 5-0 game. And then it got a little ticky-tack for a while. And then 3 runs there in the 6th for South Carolina to give themselves some breathing room. They hold on to win it. Brandon Stone, your winner, with 5.1 innings pitched. Tyler Bach, 3-for-5 with a home run and 3 RBI in the ballgame. Nolan Souza, that 9-hole hitter that gave us so much trouble, he went 3-for-4 for Arkansas in the loss. And, of course, your Bulldogs went 17-7. Texas takes a series. And that's a big road win because, you know, Auburn, number 1 5-team in the country, right? And Auburn, I think, has a good schedule, not a great schedule, but a good schedule. And State splits these two. Like, Auburn comes to us, we go to Texas. So it's all within our own hands. But Auburn, and I give Chris Burke some credit, he kind of called it out earlier this year, kind of at our expense, which I'm not a big fan of. But you knew that Butch and those guys would be able to pitch it. And they've got that young nucleus of players that are not draft eligible this year. They're going to be around for next year. And so I think Butch has really righted the ship there at Auburn after, you know, had a couple of years that just things weren't what they needed to be. And then last year, they're a top 8 national seed. And then now they're right back in the mix again. And Texas takes this one, limits Auburn to just 4 hits. And that's always a losing combination on Sunday, right? Texas A&M salvages 1 game, and it got away the only other mercy rule game on Sunday in the league. They get Georgia 18-5. Georgia held it as 4 hits in this ball game. It was all Aggies from the outset. It's 3-1 after 2, and the next thing you know, it is a 17 to one ball game. Pretty rough. Looking ahead to Tuesday night, I don't know if we have any action. No action tonight in the league. We'll look ahead to Tuesday night, and then we'll take some time to look at Southern Miss and kind of get you guys up to date on what they've done since we played them down in Hattiesburg. But tomorrow afternoon, Kennesaw State, who's 10-10, will take on number 7, Georgia. Obviously, we're rooting for Kennesaw State there. Florida and Florida State. Midweek matchup, rivalry game. Teams are very comparable in many respects. Of course, Florida wins. Florida now out of the polls. Florida State at 10. That game is going to be played in Jacksonville. Florida State will serve as the home team. Brennan Larson, again, kind of quietly having a big year down in Florida. 380 average, 10 home runs, 29 ribbies. Gators are 19-4, and I don't know. I think this is wrong. Because we just talked about Florida getting swept. So the SEC office has us wrong. Interesting game, though. South Carolina Upstate will be at Tennessee. I don't know what to expect from Tennessee's midweek pitching. South Carolina Upstate's 12-13, though. South Carolina will play North Carolina in Charlotte at Truist Field. You want to get everybody excited? Monty, go win this ballgame. And all of a sudden, you've got a two-game winning streak. And again, South Carolina 13-12, 1-5 in the league. North Carolina, again, a team that it will firmly be in the hosting discussion. It always seems them Florida State are. Murray State, of course, went to Omaha last year. They'll visit Kentucky, and this is a great RPI opportunity because Murray State is a team that will likely win that league. They're already 3-0 in the league. Kentucky, obviously, at times has had some challenges in the midweek, but that'll be a fun one, you know, if you're flipping back and forth. And then, of course, the number 11 Southern Miss Golden Eagles, are they 11 or 12? I think they're 12 in D1. And then we'll play on the number 6 Bulldogs. Kyle Morrison, in our preview today, has really come on here in the last 10 games for Southern Miss. He's hitting 354, 8 tanks, 24 RBI. And then Bryce Chance, still your hero, 457 average, 18 RBI, and I suspect probably all of them came with two outs. Central Arkansas, who already has an SEC win under their belt, they will take on Arkansas. Inbom Walker, that's going to be a night game. And then Ole Miss will travel to Memphis to play at Fogelman Field. And it's kind of an interesting trip to go up there. Memphis hasn't been very good. They're 6-16. But it's not a huge venue. And with a lot of Ole Miss fans living in Memphis, I'm sure they'll pack it out up there. But you got to like the Rebs there. Austin Peay will be at Alabama. Zion Taylor, a guy that we know from our experiences playing against him earlier this year. He's hitting 421 with 6 home runs, 24 RBI. Missouri will take on Illinois in O'Fallon, Missouri, at Carshield Field. So that could be an interesting dynamic. Tennessee Tech will visit Vanderbilt. And you know their struggles they've had with midweek pitching. You know, they had trouble weekend pitching against Mississippi State. It's not the Golden Eagles of old that won a regional at Ole Miss, but it could be interesting. Could be. You got to think that Vanderbilt offense, you get Barcy back, you feel like that helps you significantly. And then they got to get Nye back. We need Vanderbilt to get hot and go win some games for us because Vanderbilt, I don't think, is going to win enough to be in the hosting discussion, but we need them to be a top 50 RPI for us. I think that really helps us. And our RPI right now is at 10. South Alabama is at Auburn. South Alabama tends to get an SEC scalp every now and again. They got Alabama earlier this year. So Auburn can hardly relax. Brennan Wright's hitting 414 for the Jags. Houston Christian will be at Texas A&M. And Houston Christian's 11-12 overall, 4-5 in the league. They'll have to deal with Caden Sorrell, who's 393, hit 11 home runs and 38 RBI so far. Texas and Houston. Houston just over 500 at 12-11 and 1-5 in the league. And then the Texas Longhorns, again, big road win to get that series win at Auburn. They'll be happy to play. And then probably a game to watch to kind of keep up with. Louisiana Tech is at Alex Box. And you know LSU struggles in midweek games. Louisiana Tech is capable of beating LSU. And know as well as I do, Lane Burrows and those guys are going to be fired up to go play. As Mike Leach used to say, be the most excited to play. Well, Louisiana Tech will want to play LSU a lot more than LSU wants to play them, especially after dropping a difficult series at home to Oklahoma. You never know who's going to show up. But we've heard there's been some dissension in the ranks down in Baton Rouge among this team, so it'll be interesting to see how things play out. But Louisiana Tech, 15-9 overall and 4-1 in the league. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But don't be surprised if Tech makes this a real ball game. They need this, to say the least. And taking a real brief look ahead, and we'll do a little bit more on this on Wednesday. There'll be some other Missouri's going to play Lindenwood on Wednesday. Lindenwood 10-13. And then we have Oklahoma and Texas starting on Thursday. And we get into the regular weekend. South Carolina will be at Georgia. Auburn will be at Alabama. Florida will be at Arkansas. A&M will be at Missouri. Of course, State will be at Ole Miss. Kentucky will be at LSU. Man, it's just, I don't know what to tell you about the Tigers. I don't know. And then Tennessee will be at Vanderbilt. And so, interesting week ahead of us for all of us around the Southeastern Conference. But, yeah, now it's time for us to kind of transition into our Southern Miss preview. Brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, bar none, if you're bringing a large group to town, and you should. You've been putting it off. You've thought about it. Man, how cool would it be to have everybody under one roof? That'd be amazing if we could do that. Well, you can, right? Six bedrooms, two soon-to-be three baths, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, that huge back porch area, plenty of room for everybody to just kind of stretch out and watch the sunset and just enjoy life. And then there's the fire pit area. Still got some cool nights ahead of us. And so that's a great opportunity for you, too. And maybe you're thinking long-term about football season. It's never too early to start making those plans. The Stark Vegas Clubhouse is just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. It's the old renovated country club clubhouse out past the Highlands. Very easy to get to. A lot of peace and quiet. Plenty of parking. You don't have to worry about that. You can do your tailgating right there. Instead of having to lug everything to campus, you can just do it all right then and there. And then when the game's over, you can get home, go on, turn on SportsCenter, watch more football, whatever you'd like. But we've stayed there. We had a blast. We hope to do it again. Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. When you do, their Facebook page auto-populates. You can check out all the pictures of all the amenities, of all the things available to you and your guest. And then, of course, booking options. You can book through Airbnb. You can book through VRBO. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Evolve website. And use promo code BSR10. BSR10, the number 10, gets you 10% off your stay. That's right. So by listening to the show, you're saving some money at the premier place to stay in the Golden Triangle. You owe it to yourself. Make some memories with the people you care the most about. All right, let's take a look at Southern Miss. And since we have been together, they have played 12 games, and they're 8-4 during that stretch. We've played 11. We're 9-2. So let me get you up to speed here, and then we'll talk a little bit about their starter, and you can read more about him over at Gene's page in the morning. And we'll get ready to play that ball game tomorrow night at 6. So after they beat us 7-6, and again, give Southern Miss credit, they executed, we didn't. I'm in no way taking anything away from the Golden Eagles. It wasn't like last year's game. We came from behind, took the lead, but remember, we dropped the pop-up that gave them a run, and a guy busted it all the way around from first base, crazy. And then we had two wild pitches that gave them the lead back. We had the lead trying to close this thing out, and so we were kind of co-conspirators in our own demise. But at the end of the day, Southern Miss made the plays to win. We didn't, and that's why they claimed to win over us. Well, they came back the next day, and again, it was the five-game week for them, and they got beat by Nicholls State to score two runs in that game and lose 3-2. Well, then they swept North Alabama, as you'd expect, and really these games weren't competitive, 9-4, 6-1, 9-2. And then they walk off Ole Miss, 2-1. You know, maybe Southern Miss will claim a state championship when it's all said and done. And this is a quality Southern Miss team. And anybody telling you otherwise is really kind of being disingenuous, right? Ole Miss, good offense, healthy just one run against midweek pitching. Good job by Ostrander, right? And as I wrote earlier today, they lead the Sun Belt in ERA and the number of strikeouts as a pitching staff. You knew Ostrander would have good pitching, and they've gotten the offensive pieces around him. And this was a pitcher's duel, and Ole Miss loses it on a Southern Miss walk-off. Happy that happened. But again, I think it says a little bit about the grit of this Southern Miss team. Well, then they head to Arkansas State to open up Sun Belt play. And Arkansas State gets them 8-5 on Friday. Southern Miss answers back on Saturday and wins 7-1. And then in a rubber game, it's the Howell Nation getting the series win. 5-2 winners on Sunday. And then a lot of people said, oh, look at a Southern Miss team, right? I mean, you know, they're kind of struggling a little bit. And there's going to be up and downs in a season. Well, they bounce back and play Nichols down in Biloxi. And they win that game 4-0. And again, good pitching. This past weekend, and I think this could play a factor into this weekend. Right now that everybody's in a conference play, you have to be mindful of innings pitched, right? Everybody's about 25 games in. Arm care is important. You may have some guys a little bit banged up. All of these games against Troy required some relief pitching. Troy wins game one 6-5. Southern Miss bounces back to win 11-5. And then on Sunday, Southern Miss wins at 5-4. So competitive games typically mean you don't play back of bullpen guys, right? You have to use a lot of your better pitchers. And you know, you got to do well in your league at this point. And again, you go back and you look at the Southern Miss thing. They threw four pitchers. McCarty English started the game and struggled. So they had to go to the pen early. He gave up four runs and threw two innings. Struck out one, walk one, hit one, only faced 12 batters. And then they had to bring in Sundstrom. And he goes four innings of scoreless relief. And then J.W. Armstead, guy like he's been there forever, he comes in and goes two-thirds of an inning, but he gives up a little bit too. And then Camden Clark comes in and gets the final seven outs of this ball game, four strikeouts, no walks, and just the one hit there. And so, again, you had to use some of your premium arms. So, you know, how does that affect their pitching this weekend? It's not – or this Tuesday night. It's not going to be like a bullpen game like it was when we were down there in Hattiesburg. So, you know, that's the thing as we kind of get into our pitching preview. We'll give you a little some highlights here just because I think it's important for you to kind of know, you know, what you're facing. But, we're going to start Chris Billingsley. And, of course, that move was met with some skepticism by some of their fans. But reality of it is some guys just prepare better. And Chris has had some good moments and some moments not so great. And, you know, eight walks against four strikeouts is not going to inspire a lot of confidence. So I think it's important for him to go out and get off to a great start. That's not a hot take. Everybody kind of knows that's the case. But, I think that we will be somewhat liberal with our substitutions so we don't exhaust too many people for the weekend. Their starter is going to be 6'4", 200-pound junior Thomas Crabtree. Started his career at Tennessee. And maybe that's not right. Did he start there? I think he went to Pearl River. Yeah, he went to Pearl River and then to Tennessee and then winds up at Southern Miss. And against college opponents last year, 12 appearances, two starts. He went 2-0 with a 3 ERA, struck out 20, walked 15. Things change. He gets in the portal. This year, it's been an interesting deal with him. So he has done a little bit of everything. He's made six appearances and three starts. But UC Santa Barbara gave up three hits, but just the one run. And that was on a solo home run because he is a guy that's going to challenge you. Well, they win that game 6-5. And then they take on Baylor. And he goes two innings there and gives up one hit, strikes out five, and gets two walks. Did have a hit by pitch. They win the game 5-1. Then he pitches against Nichols in the loss. And he goes 4 1/3 innings there and gives up all three runs and gets the loss. He's tagged with the loss. And again, he was the starter. Eight strikeouts, a couple of walks in that game. Just a couple of extra base hits, one of them which was a home run. And then against Ole Miss, he goes three innings against Ole Miss, one hit. And that's a good offense. Two strikeouts, gives up the one hit, an extra base hit. And they end up winning that game 2-1. Arkansas State, he works 1 2/3 innings of relief, gives up two earned runs, and they lose that game 5-2. This past weekend, we're just talking a couple days ago, right? On Saturday, he goes 1 1/3, allows two earned runs on three hits, a couple strikeouts and a walk, and a hit by pitch. But they win the game 11-5. That's on Saturday. So not sure how deep he works, but he has proven to be a guy that can get you through the order at least once, possibly two times, you know, or close to it. I guess he hadn't proven that this year. But the reality of it is he's a spot starter and a reliever and really more of a fastball changeup guy. You know, he's got some breaking stuff, but by and large, he kind of relies on the fastball and the changeup. So a guy that can change speed sometimes is more deadly than a guy that can just blow it past you, because eventually you can adjust when you know it's just the heat coming at you. So we'll see how things progress. I feel good about the ball game. I felt good going down there. I feel better about it here because we're home, and we're going to need a good crowd. We absolutely are going to need a good crowd, and we're going to need you guys to come be a part of that. So everybody that can be here, we'd encourage you to be here. Real quickly, before we get out of here, let's kind of look at where we are statistically. Mississippi State now, with a little margin on Georgia, we'd kind of, you know, swap back and forth for a little bit with top offenses. State now leading the SEC with a .343 batting average. Georgia hitting .335, and of course many of their runs coming via the home run. Texas A&M, of course, it lost the series to Georgia. They're third. Yeah, and again, it's so interesting. LSU, a program, in many respects, has been built on offense. They've had some great pitchers too. I'm in no way. And no way throwing shade, but last in the league at .277. And just above them is Tennessee and Florida at .278. And then there's that Arkansas team that's 4-2 in the league, hitting .288. And again, I think we let them off the hook. We did. Vanderbilt's eighth in the league. And just in case you didn't know, even though we limited them to seven hits on Friday and Saturday combined, they're still middle of the pack offensively, and that's an interesting note for me. I think, look, pitching-wise here, State has improved a little bit. We're up to fifth in the league with a 3.50 ERA, but leading the pack, a full run better than us is Auburn. Yeah, for sure. Ole Miss, 356, just a little bit behind us, but interesting notes, right? I mean, again, there's a big enough sample size, you're beginning to kind of get a sense of who everybody is. Now, looking at the individual numbers, Bryce Chance leads the SEC by a very wide margin when it comes to hitting. He's hitting .457. Daniel Jackson is second from Georgia, who is having a monster year for the Bulldogs, is hitting .411. So Bryce, 46 points higher than the number two guy. And then not too far below him at seventh is Noah Sullivan, who's hitting .382. So, yeah, again, you'd expect a team that's doing as well as we are offensively to have some guys with some pretty gaudy stats. Bryce is third in the league on on-base percentage at .552. Brendan Lawson, we've talked about on the show a good bit, he's at .585. He's first. And then Trey Gamble from Oklahoma is second. So Noah Sullivan right there, too, at six, willing to take the walk is Noah Sullivan. He's .516. So you got a couple guys up there. And a lot of times, too, we're turning the lineup over. So you're giving, Ace Reese an opportunity to hit against a pitcher in a stretch. And a guy, too, that will have runners on. And speaking of Ace Reese, he is tied for fifth in the league with 29 runs scored. Which means a lot because he's getting on base, but it means the guys behind him, Noah Sullivan and Reed Stallman, are doing a good job driving him in. In hits this year, Ace Reese, 32. Of course, he's getting more at-bats than Bryce because of the fact Bryce is typically hitting ninth. Doubles, Ace leads the SEC with 12. And right there in third, it's Bryce Chance. And I think every one of them went down the left field line or inside the bag at third. Ryder Woodson tied for third with Bryce Chance. A handful of guys in there too. And so we've got a lot of doubles. Triples this year, tied for first is Garrick Fry. Yeah, interesting type stuff, right? And again, you work through these numbers and, you know, they're all evidence of a great team. And so, you know, as soon as the series is over, you know, we start, you know, we got to break it down. We got some segment of our fan base. No matter what we do and how well we do it, we always have to find fault in it. You know, we had a discussion about that Drew Weyers needed to be played more. And maybe he should. But the reality of it is they're basically platooning right-lefty, right? And so with, you know, with the splits, and you'll learn more about that, the splits for Crabtree against righties are not favorable. Righties are getting to him at a much greater proficiency than lefties. Righties are hitting over 300. And so that's where you start thinking, yes, this is a right-handed pitcher, so you wouldn't ordinarily just stack lefties with a guy with the splits that he's got. You know, just traditional wisdom says we want to set up right-left matchup. But when righties are hitting over 300, you got to kind of wonder about that. Do you let Drew Weyers play second on Tuesday? Maybe you do. Do you let Vitas Valenkas play right field? I don't know, because Jacob Parker's the SEC Freshman of the Week. I don't know if you sit him, right? But you got to work on the splits because everybody's analytics are a little bit different. And so when we get back together on Wednesday, hopefully we are celebrating another win and extension to the winning streak. But also, too, we know that Southern Miss is going to contend for that league. They'll absolutely be in the hosting discussion. And so we want to make sure that we're in a good position from an RPI standpoint. We can ill afford to have, you know, midweek losses, as you guys are well aware. And every loss we've had has been to a team ranked in the top 10. Well, we're a team in the top 10, too. And so we got to beat our contemporaries. And even though Southern Miss has dropped out of the top 10, they're still right there, I think, at 12. So this will be a quality win for us. We need to find a way to go make it happen. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We have to go make it happen. So then we had to Ole Miss. And you guys know, what have we won? 26 of 35 against them. And last time we went up there, it didn't go well. And we weren't nearly as good offensively. But, of course, how do we handle the pitching responsibilities? We fully expect Ryan McPherson to be out this weekend and probably for a little bit longer. And so that changes a little bit. But there are a lot of people that like having their top pitcher as the number two guy. Because if you win on Friday, then you feel pretty confident you're going to win the series with your best guy going on Saturday. If you lose on Friday, you got to even things up and give yourself a chance. And that's the thing that I think is the probably the takeaway if you're a Mississippi State fan. As I mentioned earlier in the show, back of the bullpen Sunday guys are not going to fare well against this Mississippi State offense. They're just not. And so if you get a Friday win, then you kind of start thinking about the possibility of a sweep. And it's so hard to sweep on the road. It is, no matter where you go in this league. Missouri, of course, a little different. Maybe Kentucky, even though Nick is kind of a Bolshevik at times, you know. But the reality of it is you've got to work through this thing. And if you feel confident you're going to win on Saturday and you feel reasonably confident you can win on Sunday because you think your offense can carry a little bit, you can get a little more creative on Friday. I'm not saying you necessarily have to throw off, but I'm not moving Valenkas to Friday. I'm not. You may. I'm not. We'll see what Brian O'Connor and Justin Parker do later this week. If you hadn't done so, go order your books at DutyNoble.com, DutyNobleBook.com. And right now they tell me that the best-selling book is When the Bottom Falls. And I appreciate that more than I can share. We talked about it on the show, and some people said, hey, I want to go get it. When I went and spoke at Brandon High School last week, the principal told me, your name seemed real familiar to me. And I thought, well, here the Flim Flam stuff comes. She goes, no, my husband is in recovery, has your recovery book. And said it was very good. And I appreciate that, and I appreciate the renewed interest in this book. It is probably the book that I'm most proud of, to be quite honest with you. Very difficult to write that book, but very important to write it. But you can get signed copies of all my sports titles and When the Bottom Falls at DutyNobleBook.com. Come float with us at True Rest Float Spa of Stargirl. I'm trying to get in there and float, but my schedule and her schedule hadn't kind of meshed. Because, like, when I'm off, the spa's busy. right? And I don't want to go up there and just take up a spot that she could use for a paying customer, right? And so I've got to get creative and get in there and float. I hadn't floated in a couple weeks, and I can feel it. I can feel it in the quality where I sleep. So maybe you need some rest. You can get True Rest at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. Dial 662-268-7601. You can speak directly to my lovely wife, Dana, and who recently got a haircut. And you can let her know kind of what you're looking for, what your questions are. She can get you answered, and she can get you scheduled. And come join us over at jeanspage.com. They're running a 50% off the annual subscription price special. And so you begin to think about that. If you take advantage of that now, that gets you all the way through football and into March Madness next year and into SEC baseball play. So take advantage of it, half off, and then you're going to be with us for a while. And you know, you can take advantage of the message boards and get your questions answered by our experts. But the reality of it is we provide the best and most comprehensive coverage in the history of Mississippi State University. And that's a hill that I'll die on, and I'm happy to argue with anybody that wants to smoke. So I hope you guys have a great week. I'll be back on Wednesday. And again, hopefully we're celebrating the Bulldog win, and we'll start looking at Ole Miss a little bit and kind of looking ahead. Of course, we've had some other things that have happened. We picked up a commitment from Dre Ote, a cornerback out of Riverdale High School in Tennessee. He's been able to reclass, so he is going to enroll at Mississippi State in June. Yeah, he was a guy that they were chasing pretty hard for the 2027 class, and then they figured out they could get him in now. Guess what? He's ready to roll. Committed today, and he'll be here in 2.5 months and be a part of your football program and get a jump start, really, on strength and condition. He'll redshirt this first year. He needs to put on some weight. And then Awa Fain, the first Mississippi State women's player to announce her decision to transfer. She didn't play much. You know, we hate that for, you know, people to come in here and not have the success that they dream of. But the reality of it is we need the scholarship spot. And I hear that Louisiana Tech may be a landing spot for her. That's going to do it for today. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.